This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 31st at 11.05 a.m. Boo. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like maybe WOSU will let me capitalize on my likeness. Maybe some modeling gigs, voice work, maybe my own video game.
Have to get the NCAA to approve? No, you wouldn't have to. Let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those Snollygosters who keep us in business. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. For new listeners, our namesake, Snollygoster, is a shrewd, self-serving politician. Redundant, we know. But this is our civil but irreverent look at politics.
Civil but irreverent. That's us. This week, we're going to talk about why very few people give a damn about local politics. I know it's odd for a political podcast to talk about how nobody cares about politics, but stay with us. We're talking about local politics, hyper-local politics. In case you have not heard, we have an election on Tuesday. Voters will cast ballots for city council, school board, judges. The stray tax issue is out there on the ballot. Maybe a liquor license request for your neighbors.
A liquor request? That's kind of interesting. Yeah. But let's just say that you won't have to wait in line to cast your ballot. We know that. 2 years ago, 202,000 voters cast ballots in Franklin County here in central Ohio. That equals to a 23% turnout.
All right, here's where it gets complicated, so stay with us. Let's compare that to the year before, 2016. Remember that election? Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. In Franklin County, 593,000 people voted, which was a 70% turnout.
I don't have an MBA like you, Mike, but I know 23 is less than 70.
Quite a bit less.
So people turn out for national elections, but not as much for local elections. We know the presidential race was really exciting, but let's compare the relative worth of one vote here in Franklin County.
So let's take Hilliard, pretty large suburb just west of Columbus. There were 18,000 votes for city council in 2017. So in that election, each vote was worth one in 18,000. You know, not a whole lot of influence, but still, there was one in 18,000.
Yeah, and a year earlier, Ohio cast 5.2 million votes for president. So that means that same Hilliard vote was only worth one in 5.2 million. So nationally, it was only worth one in 129 million. But as we know, national vote counts do not elect the president, only electoral college votes do.
So a lot of math there, a lot of ratios, but here's our point. If you are looking for value, and we all are, your local election vote is almost infinitely more valuable than your presidential election vote. But many of us skip that local election, but yet would not miss the presidential election.
We are not here to lecture you or to make you feel guilty about not voting next week.
Yeah, we are.
We are, you're right. But we're just trying to figure out why it's like this, and do we just have to accept it? So joining us now is longtime political observer Marianne Sharkey. She worked as a political reporter for a long time. She worked for former Governor Bob Taft, and she now helps politicians in the Cleveland area, including Cleveland Mayor Frank Jackson. Marianne Sharkey, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. I'm honored to be here.
Why do you think not as many people care about local elections? Is it just not as sexy of a race, or what do you think it is?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. Number one, you don't have the same effort to get out the vote, rallies and people going door to door and mailers and phone calls. And, you know, there's a real tremendous effort in national and in state elections to get people to get out to vote. I think also it's just low-key races. People aren't paying attention. They should, obviously. I think we're seeing the impact of the fact that not very many people read daily newspapers anymore and are aware of, you know, these votes going on. So I think that's a combination. And then there's just plain old voter apathy where, you know, they just don't, they just decide that they don't care and they don't vote.
Here in Columbus, Marianne, you know, there are Democrats. They dominate city council, dominate the mayor's office. There's not even a Republican challenger for city council or the mayor here. So that's right. That's going to suppress turnout here. What's the situation like up in Cleveland? Are there competitive local races up there?
Well, we don't have local council races this year.
Okay.
But you know, we've had races that have been so horrible that some precincts have come in at, you know, single digit in local races. You know, 6 and 7%. I mean, I don't know how low you go, but you do. And but you'll always notice that in these local races, like, there's higher turnout, believe it or not, like in housing, public housing, because there's an effort made by organizers to go, you know, door to door and get, you know, pick up buses. The ministers are very effective here in Cleveland in terms of getting their congregations to the ballot, the souls to the polls. So we do have those kind of efforts, but sometimes it's just the race isn't that terribly competitive. You know, Mayor Frank Jackson, you know, he's already won 3-4 terms of office. People, I think it's inevitable he's going to, you know, serve another term. So a lot of it may have to do with that. But I think, you know, what's sad is that, the real impact voters can have is on a local election.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, real impact. I mean, they could make the difference for someone being elected or not elected. You know, if they put up a few yard signs, and they'll maybe put their, drive some of their neighbors to the polls, help them fill out their ballots. You know, you can actually win an election that way.
And it is your vote is more valuable in a city election, but also city government can have a bigger impact on your day-to-day life than state government. I mean, if you live in the city of Columbus, your trash, your water, your sewer, your roads, they're all linked to the city. They're day-to-day services that you have a hand in choosing the leaders who oversee these services.
That is correct. I mean, I think it's, and then they'll complain about their services, mm-hmm. and you like to say to them, well, did you vote the last election? If you didn't vote the last election, maybe we should, maybe he shouldn't be complaining. If they want good, good services, they want to hold down their local tax rates. I mean, look, and even worse are races for like judges. People just play a, guessing game. The name sounds good to me.
Don't get Mike started on judicial races.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's Mike's lifelong crusade.
You even mentioned like liquor levies, liquor options, which, Ohio is kind of quaint that way, still having liquor options on the ballot. And, a vote can make a difference.
Yeah.
On a liquor option, whether your local Kroger's gets to have Sunday hours, one vote can make that.
It's another issue near and dear to my heart.
That's right. I don't think we should be electing judges at all. That's my point there. But anyway, so the voters don't care because, there's no turnout. There's, there's apathy. Is the system rigged to keep turnout down? I'm just looking at Columbus now. It's really hard to beat an incumbent here. The way they tend to, it's less so now, but they tend to, people leave early, they appoint somebody they like to take over the seat, that person runs as an incumbent, and then they're on a slate of candidates, the city council president collects or raises all the money and then spreads it out to all the his allies on council. It really makes it very hard for a challenger to break in. That has to suppress vote as well.
Sure, but I mean, part of it, Mike, also is that, remember, probably the municipal workers are voting.
Yep.
The unions are voting. The Democratic Party apparently is doing a better job of getting people out to vote. So the people who do show up are highly motivated. And because they're highly motivated, the odds are they favor the incumbent. And unless people are really mad about something like, raising their taxes or raising their sewer rates or water rates, they'll stay home.
Yeah.
They just don't care.
I remember one city I used to work with, they imposed a trash fee. Couple incumbents lost that year because people were mad they had to pay 50 cents a bag to get their trash picked up.
Yeah, and that's why most municipalities shy away from raising those kind of fees because they know there is a backlash of the ballot. Ohio had a backlash of the ballot many years ago when they raised gas taxes, mm-hmm. Which is why next few decades, legislators were very, very shy about raising any gas taxes.
Aside from having a controversial local tax issue or a liquor levy or finding a firebrand candidate like a Donald Trump, is there anything that can really be done to increase turnout in these off-year elections?
Well, the only thing that can be done is the good old-fashioned, voter turnout mm-hmm. efforts. And then, of course, your voter turnout effort is all about you or your candidate or your party getting elected. I really am, you know, I don't understand, because voting is so easy in Ohio. I just don't get why people stay home.
Yeah, you don't even have to leave your house.
Election.
You don't have to leave your house,
Mary.
Yeah,
you don't have to leave your house. No,
send
you don't.
An absentee
you
ballot. You can go a month early or almost a month early and vote. Has it always been like this with local elections? Was there back in the good old days, Marianne? Not that we want to date you or anything.
Right. Yes,
back in the good old days, did people come out and vote more often in municipal elections or local elections?
Yes, they did. I mean, I don't have the statistics, but I know they did. And again, when I made reference to daily newspapers,
yeah,
I think that did make a difference because people were reading about it on their front page. You know, the daily newspapers, you know, felt a responsibility, a civic responsibility to, you know, to cover these local races, to cover the candidates for mayor, the candidates for school board, and to also make endorsements. Now they still do some of that, not to the extent, but the other issues is that not as many people are reading them.
Yeah, honestly, we don't cover city council as often as I did early in my career. We were at council every single week when I was a young reporter. Now we cover city council when they make news, and it's not the same blanket coverage every single week in and week out. It's for resources and also for listener interest too drives that decision.
That's exactly right. I'm around at Cleveland City Hall quite often, and you hardly ever see a camera over there. And when you do, it's not a reporter. It's just somebody came over to shoot something.
Yeah.
From an assignment editor's point of view, myself, if I'm trying to assign a story, I'm going to find the story that has the impact on our most listeners and readers. And a lot of times that's not Columbus City Council. We have a lot of listeners who don't live in the city of Columbus. And so it's hard to cover municipal races as much as the State House. It just, from a pure resources point of view, it doesn't make much sense, or at least doesn't make as much sense.
I know, but they still look at it as the mother city, though. I mean, I know that in the Cleveland area, even as the majority of the population doesn't live in the city of Cleveland, they still follow city of Cleveland news.
And with municipal income taxes, even if you don't live in the city, you tend to pay taxes to that
you
city.
You still pay them
with your
same
income
thing
tax.
With Cleveland.
We'll just bring back newspapers. That'll solve it.
Well, I think I really do think it's a lack of low voter information. Not to quote Donald Trump there, but I do think it is a lack of voter information. They don't know these candidates, and so they're not motivated to go out there and vote.
Yeah. Marianne Sharkey, longtime political observer, former reporter, former State House communications staffer with Governor Taft, also now a public affairs consultant. She works with city council members and the mayor up in Cleveland. Marianne, thanks for joining us on Snollygoster.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
Happy Halloween. Bye-bye.
Same to you.
We'll be right back.
StoryCorps shares unscripted conversations between two people about important things in life: love, loss, family, friendship. StoryCorps partnered with WOSU Public Media to record and share the stories of our city. Recorded here, StoryCorps Columbus preserves pieces of our shared history for future generations. Subscribe to the StoryCorps Columbus podcast now at wosu.org/StoryCorps, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media, our weekly look at Ohio politics. Smidgen of news this week, not unexpected. Mike DeWine delayed two more executions, technically until next summer, but those are just dates on a calendar because there's really no sign that Ohio is going to resume executions anytime soon, because DeWine says we're having a hard time finding drug companies willing to provide the drugs used in the lethal injection. So basically, death penalties are an unofficial moratorium until we get this straightened out, until the state gets it straightened out.
Yeah, it looks 2019 will be the first year in 3 years that there's not an execution in Ohio. And DeWine is leaning this way because drug makers have threatened to stop selling drugs to Medicaid and Medicare and other state programs if we misuse their drugs, drugs that are meant to help people, if we use them to kill inmates.
Yeah, we say we're buying a drug for this patient, but we just take it off the shelf and use it in the prison system.
Right. Imagine if we did this with a... I'm trying to think of an analogy, but I can't think of any that would be terrible. I mean, imagine if we misused a product to kill someone, and then, of course, they're going to cut us off. Of course, that's the way it works. It's it's a very strange situation, and there, as we mentioned when we were talking earlier this morning, that there does seem to be a little bit of movement from the pro-life crowd being pro-life when it comes to opposing the death penalty.
Yeah, I mean, first let's look at the polls. If you look at Gallup polls over the past 20 years, right now, roughly 56% of Americans support the death penalty for someone convicted of murder. So it's still a clear majority of Americans support the death penalty.
They support the idea of people being put to death.
They support capital punishment for people convicted of murder. But that's down from 80%. That was the high back in the mid-90s. So it went from 80% support the death penalty down to 56. So there's a movement down. It's kind of leveled off in recent years, but it's still much less than it was 20 years ago. It follows the whole, to be back in the 90s, to be tough on crime, you had to support the death penalty, and you had to support sending them to jail and throwing away the key. Mandatory minimum sentences, three strikes and you're out, death penalty for all these crimes. Well, fast forward 20 years later, DNA, exonerations, overcrowded prisons, the sort of school-to-prison pipeline, people put in jail for relatively minor drug offenses for 10, 15 years. It's expensive to run these prisons.
It's expensive to try to put people to death with the appeals process.
Yeah, it's expensive to put people to death.
It's cheaper just to house them.
So you're seeing some softening on, you don't need to be pro-death penalty in every case to be tough on crime. I think, and that's also partly fueling, I think, conservatives coming around to supporting or opposing the death penalty.
Yeah, there's a bill in the State House from our old pal Niraj Antani to do away with the death penalty.
He has joined the perennial bill filed by Democrats to do away with the death penalty. But he, a conservative Republican from Miamisburg, he's the co-sponsor of this bill that would do away with the death penalty, replace it with life in prison without parole. He basically says, for the same reason Mike DeWine is, the drugs are not available and it's expensive.
And we are penned in by state law, which says we can only put people to death using a lethal injection. We cannot bring back the electric chair. That would take another piece of state law. That could presumably happen. But, I mean, when you hear crazy ideas, like the guy who wanted to use fentanyl seized in drug busts to put people to death, and some people might wonder why. That's why. State law says we can only use the lethal injection. And I'd be surprised at the 56% who support the death penalty now, if they just support the idea of the death penalty. Mm-hmm. I would assume that if you ask people, do you favor the way the death penalty is administered now, it would be much lower than 56%, just given the rigmarole and the years-long process. One of these executions that Mike DeWine delayed, the guy has been on death row since 1977.
Yeah. Yeah, but you look at the case this week in Central Ohio, two suburban Columbus police officers killed. This person, the suspect, faces the death penalty there if he is convicted. For those cases, for child murderers, I think a majority of Americans support the death penalty in those cases. It comes down to, is it worth it for the state to be in this business anymore? Not moral issues aside, does it make sense from a pragmatic situation to be in this business of executing inmates?
No, it's a shifting of the idea of the death penalty, I think, is shifting along with our entire idea of criminal justice. I think that people are becoming less and less supportive of the death penalty. Anyway, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week. It's our namesake award, which we dole out to the shrewdest politician, shrewdest political move of the week.
So, this week it's a tie. Conservatives.
Exciting.
One part in the tie is that conservatives who usually fawn over men and women in the military. But this week they have demonized Army Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. He's the soldier on the Ukraine call who's testified in the impeachment inquiry this week. He's the one half of our Snollygoster of the Week award. And those liberals who don't give military service people proper credit, who this week basically have deified Lieutenant Colonel Vindman because his testimony, of course, was critical of the president. So he's their hero. No matter what.
So what you're saying is political water carriers will carry water for whoever is advantageous at that moment?
Whoever. Yes. Yes.
Shot. Anyway, to both groups, small in number but loud on Twitter, you get our Snollygoster of the Week award. Also, something coming up to put on your calendar. We're having another Politics in a Pint event Thursday, November 14th at 7th Sons Brewery in Italian Village here in Columbus. Mike Thompson will be there along Ann Fisher, State House reporters Laura Bischoff, Andy Chow. It starts at 6 p.m., goes until 8 p.m. or so. Lots of fun, good beer.
Yes. Seventh Son's a great place for this for this event. Big, they have a big sort of a hall up on the upstairs on their brew pub there, and it's great fun. Get more information at our website, WOSU.org. Just click on that events tab right at the top. Politics and a Pint, Thursday, November 14th. Be there.
No liquor levy required.
None at all.
Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.